Well, we're going to wrap up the study of joy today. Are you feeling joyful today? I almost called an audible on the boys and did, got the joy down in my heart. But I didn't want to mess them up on that. Plus, I suppose it is more joyful when the kids have a song they want to be doing, right? Am I projecting up there? I'm not projecting up there. I thought I was. There we go. Maybe doing this is why it takes so long. Okay. We've looked at a lot of things about joy in the last few weeks. And I was tempted to recap all of them and then bring in a bunch of new things. And, I realize I don't think we want to overload this type of conversation. That by trying to do too many things, you can maybe strangle the life out of joy. We've looked at what the Bible has to say about the overall idea of joy. And we tracked how it seems like joy, maybe we can call the footprints of the Spirit, because it seems like the way we talk about the Spirit is the way we talk about joy. And we looked at examples of joy throughout the Bible, people that we see as joyful people in the Bible, and how they don't always seem happy all the time, but they seem to find some connection to the joy of the Lord. And then we spent some time, maybe too much time last week, looking at joy in children. And the way that Jesus responded to children and their joy. And today we come down to this question of what can we do to live joyfully? What can we do as a church to be seen as joyful people? Because truthfully, I don't know if that is the first word that comes to mind when you ask non-Christian people what they think of with Christians. I wish it were, but I'm not sure it is. And as I was thinking a lot of these thoughts this week, I had one of those moments of inspiration from an unexpected source. If you ever get emails from me, you know that often they come out rather late. It's not just you guys. That seems to be when I get a lot of my work done. There are a few Cub Scout parents that joke with me that if they ever got an email from me that wasn't late at night, they'd figure it wasn't really me. So I'm often up late, and I'd like to say that it was always getting work done, but sometimes I find myself watching YouTube videos. And there's one channel that for a while I've found myself watching. It's a bad sounding name, but I'll explain what it is. It's a channel called Cinema Sins. They put out videos called Everything Wrong With, and they'll take a movie and talk about all the things. All the little nitpicks and plot holes and all of that presented in a humorous way. And I've always found that kind of fun. I've shared about my Captain Conviction way of looking at things, and it's fun to poke holes and stuff. And so I watch Cinema Sins, Everything Wrong With, various movies that I enjoy. And eventually, though, I found myself enjoying it less and less. And I found myself saying, why am I watching a channel that takes movies that I like and gives me reasons to like them less, perhaps. And even though the person that does this channel, he says, I like many of these movies, but he sticks to the channel's motto, no movie is without sin. And there's a running counter, and every time he says something wrong with it, you know, dings, and at the end of it, they put up the total number of sins in a movie. Again, these are movie-making sins, not content, sins like that. But like I said, I enjoyed this for a while, and started thinking, maybe I'm not liking this so much. And about the same time, I found another YouTube channel of somebody that felt the same thing. And they started making videos. They called themselves Cinema Wins. And Cinema Wins would do the same thing. Their videos are called Everything Great About, name of movie. And they count, they put the same counter up in the corner, and they count, here's all the good things. And what struck me this week is I hadn't come across the tagline for Cinema Wins. I clicked on something different. And their slogan is, because liking things is more fun than not liking things. And I like that. Thinking about that, it made me think of a lot of what I was putting together for this morning, and the way that not just how the church is viewed by people, but how we do act in some ways. There are reasons that some people may come up with things other than joy to describe the things we talk about in church. Perhaps we spend more time focusing on no person is without sin. Maybe we spend too much time no community is without sin, instead of liking things is more fun than not liking things. I hope this is making sense. I think sometimes the way that we talk in our churches, in our Bible classes, and the way that we present ourselves as Christians does not carry with it the joy that we've been talking about. I think sometimes we end up being the body that picks at the little things wrong with everything instead of celebrating the things that are good. I try to put myself in the shoes of an outsider coming into the church. And I think about how I would feel. We hear so many conversations about here's what's wrong with everything. And the world today, and politics today, and kids today, and parents today, and I find myself doing the same thing sometimes. And I've been in so many of our classes even here that we end up spending so much time talking about all the things that are wrong that it doesn't sound so joyful. And we're going to focus on mainly one verse today and a little bit of the stuff around it. Towards the end of Philippians, in some final instructions given in this letter, we get this, you can call it a command, you can call it exhortation, you can call it a plea. And it says, rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. It's not really written as a suggestion. It's written as something, you need to do it. And in case you didn't hear it, do it. Rejoice. This is a word that we've been talking about in this conversation about joy. We've been talking about how, especially we looked through the Old Testament, we said joy looks like celebration and rejoicing and singing and shouting and talking about the things that God has done and the way that God has impacted us. And sometimes I think we look at this statement as a nice suggestion that wouldn't it be nice if it could always work. I think that if we spent more of our focus on how can we show that joy, instead of being so worried about all the problems and all of the things that have gone wrong and all the things that we'd like to fix and all the things that that need to be corrected, maybe we have a better chance of getting that done if we remembered what we were told to do here, and that is to rejoice. And I want to look at what leads into this. This doesn't show up just out of nowhere. Sometimes we like to look at this ending of Philippians as kind of being quick-hitting statements, but I think they come together. And if you spent some time in Philippians 4 here, you're going to recognize a lot of words that we're going to be talking about as we look at the fruits of the Spirit. And we're going to be coming back to this text a number of times. Look what comes just before. Therefore, brothers and sisters, you whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord in this way, dear friends. I plead with Euodia and I plead with Syntyche, be of the same mind in the Lord. Talking about there's conflict within the church here. We don't know what exactly is going on. We don't see him taking a side. We see him saying, be of the same mind, so you can work. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women, since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are in the book of life. He said, we can focus on a quarrel going on here. We can focus on a disagreement. We can focus on issues. We can focus on problems going on. But he says, do not miss what is true. We have worked together. We have been trying to advance the cause of the gospel. And perhaps most importantly, he says, all of these people here, even if they're fighting, even if they're not getting along, we're talking about people whose names are in the book of life. He says, if you are receiving this letter, if you are in the church, if you are part of God's people, don't miss. You are in the book of life. And what do you do because of that? Rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again. Rejoice. Because you have found something. Remember, last week we talked about the person who finds the treasure in the field, or finds the pearl of great value. You found something. You received it with joy. You went and did something about it. You have received the gift of life. Act like it. Said, so you go back to Deuteronomy, a text that I know I've mentioned a number of times. Deuteronomy 30 talks about all of the blessings from the Lord that has been offered and is available. And it says, it's not far from you. You don't have to go a long ways. It is right there. It says, I put the choice right in front of you. Choose. It says, I put it in front of you. Life and death. And what does it say? Choose life. And maybe this takes a similar tone to the class that Mike's been doing about victorious living. He says, if you are here, you chose life. Act like that's a big deal. Act like that's something that has made a difference. As a church, if we say that these are the things that are the most important parts of our identity, that that God has shown his love for us by sending his son, and our sins were taken away by his sacrifice, and we have life, and we are found in the book of life, and we are blessed, and we have eternity, why would we spend our time worrying about what's happening in Washington or Lansing? Why would that be the first thing on our minds? Why would we worry about what somebody down the street is doing? Shouldn't the first thing and the most frequent thing be celebrating and rejoicing and showing that joy of what we have? I was having a conversation with a youth group leader yesterday out at camp. They're out walking snowy trails and doing team building activities. And normally I'm the one leading, taking them to where they're going. But this was one of the groups where we had a map. And I say, you need to find where we're supposed to go by following the map. So that means I get to walk behind them with the leaders and we can talk about them. And this guy was talking about the good things that this group of high schoolers have done. And I was talking about the good things that I've seen them doing in the time out at the camp. And I said, yeah, and then that one and that one and that one are seniors. And it's really going to change the group when they leave. And I said, yeah, you always get a different personality every time you get turnover. I said, well, I wish there was turnover. But we've got these ones leaving, and there's really nobody coming up behind him. And you've probably had those conversations or heard churches saying we just aren't having new people. We had more kids and our numbers are going down. And sadly, we know those conversations. And he said, he made a comment to me that, sadly, this world is just not a nurturing environment for young Christians. And, I nodded and thought about that. And then I said something I don't think he expected. I said, who is this world a nurturing environment for? I can't really think of anybody that would stand up and say, boy, I go out in the public and I look on the internet and everything I see really is nurturing for a person like me. No matter what type of person. We often like to think about that for ourselves, but if you really think about it, how hard is it for someone to find a place that'll tell you that the world is a mess? You can go to any discussion forum, you can go to pretty much anywhere and get somebody to talk about how things are bad these days. I don't know that that's anything new. How hard is it to find a place that will tell you that you're not good enough? It's not too hard. Our young people can go plenty of places to find out where their faults are. You know what? Our old people can go to plenty of places where they can find out what their faults are. Shouldn't the church be something different? Shouldn't the church be some place where somebody's not going to come and hear those same things about, boy, everything is bad today? Shouldn't the church be something different where it's not going to be showing up and we're going to put the spotlight on you and show you, here are the things that you've got wrong that you need to get fixed? Shouldn't we be letting people know that we know the one who is enough and the one who has made us enough? Not perfect, not flawless. We can use those churchy words like justified and forgiven and things like that. Or are we going to say we have someone who's made us enough, who's called us to be enough? Shouldn't we be showing that God is at work even in the fallen world? Instead of emphasizing all the places where God, where it seems like God is not, shouldn't we be showing the places where God's light shines in the darkness, the things that are going on? Shouldn't we be showing that hope, showing that joy, showing where we can point out those footprints of the Spirit where things are happening? In our churches, in our church, we're here, right? Are we teaching a lesson worth rejoicing about? I hope so. But I know we can do better. We need to be doing something different. If we're going to be living with joy, then we can't be having the same conversations that you can get at the cubicle at work. Or the Talking Heads shows on the TV. Now, later in this chapter 4 of Philippians, in verse 8, I didn't have a slide made up for this one. Probably well-known verse. It talks about, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Now, I was thinking about the way that I've heard this verse being used, and it is usually to tell somebody that they are thinking about the wrong things. Because, oh, you shouldn't be watching that movie, you shouldn't be going to that place, because think about the noble things, think about the right things. I think we also need to turn that around and say, this is not just talking about what we shouldn't talk about, but this is saying we need to be bringing up these things. We need to be talking and thinking and acting on things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable. These are the things that lead to joy. These are the things that show that we have joy. We started this study at the beginning of the year by saying that coming off last year's study of reading through the whole Bible, studying through the whole Bible, and getting a stronger grasp of what's there, we were turning our thoughts to thinking about how we can turn that outward. We were trying to be very aware of how we are viewed in our community, how we are viewed by people outside the church, and we are trying to take these fruits of the Spirit so that we can embody these things and show those to people outside of these walls. I heard a comment from somebody this past week saying that they had heard from somebody not in the church. I said, I would be a lot more interested in being around Christians if they were more joyful like they say they are. We need to take these things. And this is not a lesson trying to say everybody's okay. There are problems out there. But we shouldn't spend so much time focusing on the problems that we forget to celebrate that core identity that we have. It should be joy first. It shouldn't be, let me show you how bad you are and how bad things are so that I can show you the solution later. It should be, let me show you what I have. And maybe you'll want the same thing. It's a big task. And we have so many tasks that we are supposed to be about. But I think there was a reason that we started with love. I think the reason the fruits of the Spirit started with love. And I think there's a reason that joy quickly follows it. It needs to be what we are about. We need to be so willing to lead with joy, to lead with the gifts of God, to show that something has changed in us, to let it be seen that we have chosen life. Not just say it, but let it be seen. We need to lead with joy when we are speaking with somebody outside of the church. They can find that other stuff in a lot of other places. And so instead of talking around in circles some more, instead of repeating some of these things, I want to close this morning singing one of the most joyful songs that I know of. In fact, I asked Bill if I can take over the invitation song this morning, because I just love doing this song. I don't know how many of you know this. We'll go over it, and I debated on whether or not to do it, but I love it so much. And this song has been on my mind the last 2 weeks when looking at joy. It was on my mind so much last night that I was trying to come up with something clever or insightful to put in my corner of the bulletin, and the only thing in my head was this song, so I just put the chorus of the song in there. Does anybody know this one? All right, I got a few. Okay. I'll go over it briefly, and then we'll sing it all together. This might be a different kind of invitation. This morning, I am inviting you to rejoice. And if there's other things you need, all that stuff we normally talk about, you, of course, you know, you can come up and share that and ask for prayers. I hope you know that if you're ever needing prayers or support or to share, even if I'm talking up here, just get up and interrupt me. We want to be with you in that. But this morning, we're going to do something a little different. I am inviting you to rejoice. This song is a little bit of a call and echo thing, but while sometimes where you see call and echo, it's the men and the women or the leader in the congregation. I've never heard of a standard on this one. Just if you feel like singing the echo, you sing it. If you feel like just holding out that note on that first line, you do it. So this is going to be, I said I wasn't going to tell anybody, but I couldn't keep it to myself, but I couldn't keep it to myself. Oh, I couldn't keep it to myself. Said I wasn't going to tell anybody, but I couldn't keep it to myself. What the Lord has done for me. That's the first part of the verse. And then it's going to go, you ought to been there when he saved my soul, saved my soul. You ought to been there when he wrote my name on the roll. I'll keep walking, I'll keep talking, I'll keep singing, and I'll keep shouting what the Lord has done for me. All right. Make enough sense that we can give it a try? Okay. I'm going to turn off the mic. I want our rejoicing on the recording, but maybe not with me mic'd up. Sometimes we always say stand and sing. Stand if you want to, sit if you want to, clap if you want to, dance if you want to. We're going to rejoice this morning. We do a lot of things. We're going to rejoice today. We'll talk about peace next week. We'll talk about problems that are going on another time. Today, let's just sing about what God has done for us. I said I wasn't going to tell anybody, but I, oh no, I couldn't keep it to myself. No, I couldn't keep it to myself. Said I wasn't going to tell anybody, but I couldn't keep it to myself. What the Lord has done for me. You ought to have been there when he saved my soul. You ought to have been there when he wrote my name on the roll. I'll keep walking, I'll keep talking, I'll keep singing, and I'll keep shouting what the Lord has done for me. Said I wasn't gonna sing about it, but I couldn't keep it to myself. No, I couldn't keep it to myself. No, no, I said I wasn't gonna sing about it, but I, what the Lord has done for me. You ought to have been there
when he saved my soul. You ought to been there when he wrote my name on the roll. I'll keep walking, I'll keep talking, I'll keep singing, and I'll keep shouting what the Lord has done for me. Said I wasn't gonna shout about it, but I, no, no, I, no, no, I, said I wasn't gonna shout about it, but I, what the Lord has done for me. You ought to have been there when he saved my soul. You ought to have been there when he wrote my name on the roll. I'll keep walking, I'll keep talking, I'll keep singing, and I'll keep shouting what the Lord has done for me. You ought to have been there when he saved my soul. You ought to have been there when he wrote my name on the roll. I'll keep walking and I'll keep talking, I'll keep singing and I'll keep shouting what the Lord has done for me.
We're going to close with a prayer, and then we're going to go out, and hopefully we're going to let everybody know.
Dear Heavenly Father, come to you again. Ask your blessing on all those that are sick and ill and otherwise got in.